And we're back here once again with another episode of the Iron Man Podcast, episode 341 with Mr. Joel Mulvey, actually.
You nailed it. Yeah.
Oh, man. Because usually if I misnail it, I'll tell the guests my internet was bad and I just delete the show and start over. So good thing I nailed it the first try.
It's pretty good. I feel like it's such a simple name, but you'd be surprised how many times people have butchered it, but you crushed it.
And you were someone that I was acquainted with because a person that I think reviewed some of your work tagged you in one of their posts. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll just reach out to talk to some of these guys. As everyone knows, I like talking to people that have, you know, worked on comic books, you know, obviously the indie scene, because, you know, mainstream people really wouldn't be lying to talk to me, obviously. I'm pretty critical of a lot of people's work,
listen,
actually.
I think you're knocking yourself short. I think, like, any guy or any creator that likes to go out and, like, make comics kind of, you know, I'd like to talk about them no matter what. So I don't care if I'm drawing Spider-Man or my own stuff. Like, I enjoy talking about craft, talking about what other people are interested in, what they like, what they don't like. Mm-hmm. So you're good. I trust me. I think you're outgoing and nice enough. You'll get a lot of people.
Oh, thank you. And also start here, which is, how was your life growing up, actually?
Wow, you're going right into that deep. It was good. Single parent family, but I had a lot of extended family around, and
okay.
You know, growing up, typical boy stuff, sports, stuff like that. But then at a certain point, you walk into a place, you find out about this amazing thing called a comic book, you pick it up, and it was almost like an addiction from an early age where you're like, what's going on? And then, you know, you have family that's nice enough to help you out and support you and buy you a pad, like a legal pad, and like just give you some pencils and paper. And then it kind of snowballed from there.
So what was the first comic you ever actually owned when you were a kid, or the first one you ever saw?
So the first one I ever saw was something called What If. It was like
What? Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
To be fair, the first ones that was the first one I bought.
Okay.
Because I said, I was playing sports. I came in from playing baseball, rode my bike into the corner store. I wanted to get like gum and like a Gatorade. And I just saw this comic. And then I guess, not to knock the candy store's stocking methods, but I guess the books were older. And I guess the books that I saw and I purchased was probably like, I think like maybe a year or two older, just sitting on a shelf. And it was like, what if X-Men 1 Inferno? I knew nothing. I knew nothing of what it meant. I knew nothing of who the X-Men were, any of that stuff. I just saw this really cool, like gremlin-y looking thing with claws on the cover, which ended up being Wolverine. And I bought it. And then I was really, really like just smitten by it. I'd go to like any corner store I can and I'd see all these comics. But then I started noticing that there was like differences. Does this come out now? Is this something from like 10 years ago? I didn't understand, I guess, publication and how it all came out and how they were weekly and all that kind of stuff. And then my father was very kind enough to take me and like find where there's a comic shop in my neighborhood. And it was Queens Boulevard in Queens growing up. And it took me to a comic shop. And then that was it. It was lights out. Like it was going from like a corner store to, it's like saying like you like organic and you go to like a market that has like, you know, three fruit stands. Then you go to like a Trader Joe's and you're like overwhelmed by like how much is there. And that was it for me. And then I guess at that time was the original Image explosion where like, I went and there was like Spawn and Wildcats and all those other books. And that was it. I was addicted from jump.
So you were around when Image first started.
Yes.
That's crazy because they actually just had Image had its anniversary. I think, was it last week or I think at the beginning part of this month, I think Image had its anniversary. Actually,
yeah,
which is crazy.
Yeah, it was. I think it's 30 years. Am I right or am I wrong?
Fucking crazy to think about now, because that means, fuck, they started in what, like the 90s, I think.
Late 90s. Yeah. As a kid, just getting into comics at that time, it was like the only way I can explain it was like almost like they were like rock stars. because I remember like being like, oh, Todd McFarlane is at a signing in New York. So my father's like, yeah, all right, grab a friend of yours or whatever that's into it. We'll go into the city and we'll go online. And then we get to get online and it's like, you know, 1,000 people long. And you're like, what? Like, you know, like, and I'm like, and I had never even done conventions or shows before. So like, it was a wild time to like start seeing stuff.
Okay. So growing up, you kept with like, you know, buying comics actually and consuming them. What is your like expertise with comics actually? You're a writer, you're a letterer.
Well, I mean, that's going to be subjective to maybe more of the reviewers that you listen to. But I kind of took a lot of lessons from Todd McFarlane growing up because he was like pounding the pavement saying, don't do big two stuff, work for yourself, own your own stuff.
He was very adamant about that. Yeah, it's true.
100%. So,
and like, I agree with him, actually. Yeah.
I do and I don't. I mean, like, listen, like, there's still like a little kid inside me that wants to draw Spider-Man. There's still a little kid inside of me that wants to draw the greatest thing versus the Hulk battle that's ever happened. I want to draw Red Hood. I want to draw Kraven. Like, there's characters you want to take a stab at so that you are forever known as being able to at least say you kind of hit that mountaintop. But at the same time, I don't think there's anything more freeing and more rewarding than telling your own stories.
Yeah, like, I think a lot of people won't actually understand this. So, like, when you say that, a lot of people are going to go, wait, most people would want to, you know, go to Marvel, DC, draw, like, Spider-Man, draw, like, Batman, Superman, X-Men, Spider-Man, all these, like, really popular characters. But the issue that a lot of people brought up over the years is not only do the companies not really treat you as if like you just created something really like a gold mine for them, they essentially might take you off the project. They might honestly have you not do any future projects actually. Just there's a lot of like, how would you say, like nepotism that goes on. Whereas you just did your own thing, you know, you just have all that stuff to yourself, honestly. You know, you create something for yourself, you can make all the money for yourself. Less exposure because you're working.
And now there's more opportunities than ever. You have Webtoons, Kickstarter, Indie, like all these crowdfunding ways. I mean, I think, and I hope I'm not, I mean, if someone's listening, someone wants to correct me, feel free. I'm pretty sure that Kickstarter puts out the most comics more than any publisher.
That's
because
crazy.
There's so many, I believe so. I think they're the top publisher because, I mean, obviously they're not a quote unquote, you know, typical publisher, but so many people put out material there that they're credited with putting out the most books, you know, like every kind of year consistently. But yeah, but at the same time, like, yes, there's going to be gatekeepers. I'm not of that idea of like, you have to be one way or the other. You have to not like big two to do your indie stuff. You have to like, that's just not the way I'm cut. I think there's enough room for everyone to do a lot of different cool stuff. And I think the people in big two comics, I understand what you're saying 100% that there's nepotism and there is, but like, you know, there's a saying, you've got to be one of three things. You've got to be good, quick, or great to work with. If you got two of the three, you can get a job in comics. And then, it, you know, understand it's an entertainment medium like anything else. If you put asses in seats, if you sell books, you know, you're probably going to be able to, you know, find work somewhere.
Recently, the Transformer G.I. Joe line that Skybound now owns but distributes through Image, right?
Yep.
That's been selling very well. Like, you have people constantly talking about the books, constantly saying they can't even get them because they're always sold out when they go to their comic book shops. That means people like, oh, I've already massively got them on their pull list to the point where they need to have this book. And it's something that, or Ultimate Spider-Man had that that announcement as well, where when it was announced, because usually on like Twitter, when somebody's announced, it's very divisive. But I remember when Ultimate Spider-Man number 1 got announced, that came out, the newest version came out like last month.
Yep.
Overwhelmingly positive. People love the idea. And it's just like with the whole G.I. Joe Transformers thing, sells very well. People can't really get the book. And it shows that, you know, you make a good book or something that is of quality and it gives the audience what they want, they'll buy it. It's not rocket science.
And I mean, you're talking about Daniel Warren Johnson, who's like one of the greatest creators in comics today. He's prolific. He's a writer. He's an artist. He merges that line that I think Todd McFarlane said years ago, where it's like, you can make really commercial stuff, but that's also really meaning for you as a creator. And then, you know, Skybound doesn't put out many stinkers. Like, they're pretty well known for like putting out quality stuff and then getting a recognizable IP and putting it out like that with Daniel Warren Johnson, whose artwork pops off the, you know, off the page. Like,
great. That's really good.
That's a win-win. I mean, I think you have another case right now with Thundercats. Thundercats is like...
I did hear about that. I heard it did very well for its first issue.
Insanely well, you know? And then it's like, okay, well, number ones always sell, but now number two just went out and, you know, I think they're doing like almost close to 100,000 on the second issue. So like, that's great for comics overall and comic shops. Like if it gets people to come in, check out a book, and then maybe while they're there, something else catches their eye. Like that's a win for everybody. Right.
Because I've also had that, and I've been telling people that a lot too. Like, like if you hear about something and you want to go check out your local comic book shop, even if you don't even buy it, because you like kind of look and you're like, oh, that's not my thing. While you're there, you might see a graphic novel of a popular character and you buy that. That still helps the store, you know? Anything to get people in there to have them, at the most part, buying a product is going to benefit the stores. Because as you mentioned earlier, you're in New York. I know New York has comic book shops. I don't know if you have one next to you or around you. But what is the, like, because I actually don't have one around me. I actually have to go out for them. But when new stuff drops on Wednesday, I don't know if you guys should go for Wednesdays anymore. What is the general feel, like, when you get around people? Like, do you think there's, like, enthusiasm? Or do you think people are very, like, skeptical on what's going on?
I think if you're one of the people that go into a comic shop every Wednesday, that you are just a dedicated fan. Like, right. But I live by like one of the best shops in New York called Royal Comics and Collectibles.
Oh, okay.
And it's just a great example of what a comic shop should be. It's inviting. It's welcoming. It's helpful. The people are super excited. They do great stuff on social media. They're on Instagram. They do live every Wednesday. So tomorrow you can go to their Instagram and they're going to walk you down their aisles and show you all the new comics that are coming out, all the variants, give you ways to get in touch with them. So even if you're not in the area, you can order, you know, through their store and all that stuff. And like, to me, I think they do a great job of making the store comfortable to where people are welcome to come in. And it's very inviting to anybody new or old or current comic fan. And then the other really fun thing about the shop is I think that, which is a nice thing to see, I think that for all the divisiveness you brought up before that you see on Twitter, I'm not calling it X. I'm just not doing it. It's Twitter. It still comes up Twitter.com. Elon, you're going to have to buy me out to make me say that.
Or not even just Twitter. Like, you see all of this divisiveness on like Instagram, Facebook. When any like comic news pops up, it is basically war with people when they're going at each other.
And that's so curious because I talk to retailers all the time and I go into shops and it's not like that in shops. And like you talk to
you talk to
real owners. And by the way, go to conventions. It's very rare to have a negative interaction with a fan or with anybody. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't tell you the amount of times I've had a negative interaction with people. And then even like the biggest people who get the most divisive garbage, you know, crap online, you don't see that in real life. Probably because most people are not going to be brazen and ballsy enough to say that to someone's face. Whereas they could say it behind a keyboard. But I would like love to say to anybody, and I've had people destroy my stuff.
Really? It's crazy.
My favorite review, and I know if the person who said it, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the name. They once said, I wish this publisher would have gotten Humberto Ramos to draw this book with his foot. It would have been better than Joe Moby's crap art or something like that. To where I literally said to the publisher, can we put that quote on the front cover of the book? Because again, New York, very thick skin. I appreciate if people buy my stuff. I appreciate if they don't like my stuff. But I will say to you sincerely, most times it is the complete opposite in real life. Now, in a comic shop, I've heard people say, oh, I dropped this book because I don't like the way they did XYZ, or I dropped this because it's not the same artist anymore, or not the same writer. Like, I've heard that, and that's all, to me, completely logistical reasons. Like, okay, I like Jonathan Hickman. He's off X-Men, I'm off X-Men. I get it. Like, that's an okay thing. But I don't really ever hear the divisive stuff too much in real life.
That's funny you mentioned that, because we went to Barnes & Noble's recently because I had to get an external hard drive for my computer because all the space is gone because I had this computer since like 2018. It's still pretty good, but you know, space runs after, you know, too much porn downloaded, right? Just kidding, people.
Listen, you shouldn't download that. It streams everywhere. You know
what I mean? That's the thing. I don't watch porn on my computer. I watch it on my phone. Ain't, I'm not burning up my $1,000 computer on porn. Smart. Hell no. But when I went to the Barnes and Noble, because I had to grab a, I wanted to just grab a few manga books, actually. I will say manga sells very well. That anyone that's telling you it's not is flat out lying. Just from my area, I have a big area here. Like what you said about like talking to people. When I went over there and I was just grabbing like Superman, I was grabbing a few books that I was gonna buy like online, but I also might as well get them here. People were like, "Hey, you like that? Like, what's your favorite run of Superman?" I'm like, "Man, that's so much different from Twitter being like, if you don't like Super, if you don't know this fucking run, you're a loser. You fucking fag up. Your mom dies." It's like you said before, like even when I went to like Frankenstein's, I'm pretty sure you know what Frankenstein's. It's like a big like, you know, like Walmart for comic fans or like you get like, toys and everything. Interactions are always awesome. You don't meet those. They're like even the ones that are perceived like crazy, or do you think they are? No, they're this is normal people, honestly. Like, I swear, like, dude, online has ruined people's brains of what actual real life is.
100%. But just think about it also. Like, I literally do this thing where if I even feel like engaging, which I normally don't, like, I normally just, you know, I'm online, I just try to post artwork, say, send good messages and all that stuff. But like, would you want to be around someone like that? Let's just say you and I go to a movie and I'm yelling already about the price of the popcorn, the way it tastes, the seat, how uncomfortable it is, how I don't like this, how that person looks like this, you wouldn't want to be around that person. Yet for some reason, that's the way people project themselves online. And I completely reject it. I do the opposite. And I don't give air to people who want to just be negative and you know, spew garbage out, because to be honest with you, that's them being unhappy. I'd rather be myself, be happy and be positive and like push that kind of stuff forward.
Yeah, that's another thing.
Hold on 1 second. I have to say that when it comes to sports, I will get vitriolic.
Okay, so why do the Giants suck? I'm
a Jets fan. I don't know any sort of Packers.
Okay. Honestly, before I get to the comment stuff, how did you feel when Aaron Rodgers got basically knocked the fuck out?
And I'm going to tell you something right now. It is the jettiest jet thing that's ever jetted. I was out with a bar full of people. He ran out of that tunnel with the American flag. Everyone is getting chills. We're like, this is it. All these years of suffering, it's finally over. And then 3 downs in, the season is over. I can't tell you how everyone in the bar almost started laughing. Like, you can't. It's like, why do I have hope? It's just the worst. It's the worst.
Yeah, that happens a lot with like the teams that I support on like esports or like traditional sports too. It's like that thing that Elon Musk said in a tweet. It's like the most unexpected thing is always the thing that happens. Have you noticed that in life in general? The most unexpected thing happens, but the thing that you do expect never happens. It's like, I gotta admit, that's true. The most unexpected is so unexpected. Aaron Rodgers is like, because people have said that he's like washed, he's not really the MVP. MVP candidate last year or a few years back. Goes on your team. People are like, oh, this guy, oh, hell yeah. First game, done. You're like, you just can't make that up.
No. You should expect it, though. As a Jets fan, it's shame on me for having hope or having some sort of, you know, seeing some sort of light at the end of the tunnel. But it is what it is. You know, you're a real sports fan. You root.
Yeah, I know how it is.
Hope things turn around.
There's good years. There's bad years. You know, like
Eagles. I heard something about good years. I don't really know many of those at Jets fan, but
man, I'll tell you this.
Wait a second. But hold on. Who's your team? Just so I know.
No, I'm Philadelphia.
Oh, you're an Eagle fan. Okay. So you've
I know what disappointment is. I know how you feel. Like, my team fucking this year started out what, like 10-1, only to end up just bombing out, going like 1-5. Fucking, it was so terrible.
But you won a Super Bowl in the last. You know, I have never seen a Super Bowl in my lifetime. So, I mean.
Hey, man, never say never. The Cincinnati Bengals went to their first one, like, what? Since, like, the 80s or some shit?
No. I'm going to stay positive. But listen, that's the pain of being a positive person. You're like, it's going to work out. It's going to work out. I don't get super negative.
I will say that when we lost to the Kansas City last year, because everyone knows I'm an Eagle fan. I've been supporting the team for a long time. I've been a fan since like 2008 when Michael Vick almost on the door. I saw when we won our first Super Bowl and people thought I was gonna cry. I was like, nope, not doing it. Nope, just walked out, held up high. Last year went and I was we were up in the game and you could just tell like quarterback, what's his name, Jalen Hurts. Just have you ever felt like when you're watching a football game, the quarterback gives up on the team because all he does is the same repetitive shit because he knows if he throws it, it's gonna get intercepted. You could just tell he just lost faith in the team, even though we were ahead. And then when we lost, I was like, man, I don't know. That just hurt so bad. Like, that was probably one of the fewest losses I've ever supported in my life from one of my teams, where it just hurt. I was like, bro, this fucking sucks. Getting that close and then losing hurts so bad.
When I saw Nick Foles step in the year you guys won the Super Bowl, there was something about that guy where it just felt like you had luck on your side. Because, yes, you could be the most talented team in the world. Yes, you could be. Mm-hmm. But you have to have, like, a touch of luck. Like, say mm-hmm. whatever you want about San Francisco. They legitimately only won because of, like, you know, a few things went their way in that game against Detroit. Like, if it wasn't for that, then it would have been a whole different game altogether. But, I mean, you got to have luck on your side. Unfortunately, the universe hates the New York Jets. It's well documented. But I think you guys, you know, for the Eagles, you still have a few good years ahead of you.
Man, the first year he joined, I remember they were like first place and went like 9-1 or some shit like that. Yep. He broke his collarbone. People were like, oh, well, that year was supposed to go to Super Bowl as well. That didn't happen either. It's just, I just know that, you know, there's something that's going to happen at a single point. One of my teams, no matter if it's esports, no matter if it's traditional sports, they will fuck up. Like last year, I think it was with the Lakers when they were facing off against,
Houston?
The eventual champions. They were from Denver.
The Denver team. The Nuggets.
Yeah. Fucking. just absolutely clapped. Even though they started the season bad, they were like rising up and shit. They actually had a great run of the playoffs up to the point they got clapped. I was like, bro, this is like hell. Am I like in purgatory or something?
Well, listen, right now the New York Knicks are trying to make it seem like they're back. They're going to be doing some good stuff. It's going to be good. I fully expect to step on a rake at some point in this playoffs because we're going to get in the playoffs. But now it's like, listen, we just went up against the Celtics. Celtics smacked us around a little bit. You don't really know. I'm a diehard hockey fan. So the New York Rangers are like the best record in all of hockey. So right now I'm very calm, very tentative. I'll see where it goes, but you know, we'll see if we can get a championship.
So I'll ask you about your indie comic. So how long have you actually been in the indie scene? So you've never actually worked with the big two, right? Or even like major indies like Dark Horse or Image, right?
No, Image, IDW, Black Mask.
You've worked with Image and IDW and Black. That's crazy. Okay. How was your experience working with those companies then?
All great.
Okay.
You know, I haven't had too bad of an experience, but like the books I put out with really, really talented people with me that make me look better. And they all do big two, big five, big, you know, whatever stuff you want to say. And like, I really think like back to what you were saying before, you asked what my specialty is. Normally I'm just, I came in as an artist and then, I kind of wanted to try to write because I feel like, that's I want to be a five tool player. So that's something that would be helpful to know. So I put out a few books that I wrote, but I really do think it's when, I've collaborated, like co-writing with people. Like I've co-written with Rich Tuick, who's I think he has a Marvel book coming up soon with like a cyber Spider-Man book, and he's done Superman and a whole bunch of big stuff at IDW, and I think he has stuff with Dark Horse. Like it becomes very like, you know, once one publisher gives you a job, they all kind of like try to reach out to you and use you. And then again, if you're good, if you're on time, and if you're a pleasure to work with, you know, you can always kind of get work.
How did you hone in your art style throughout the many years?
It's still a work in progress, but I grew up with Todd McFarlane and all these other artists, and you know, Art Adams is a big influence for me, and Humberto Ramos, Frank Quietly, and you know, you just kind of see things you like. Pacing, the way they tell a story, the way they draw things dynamically, like Daniel Warren Johnson. And then you kind of all put it together with whatever your style is, and what comes out on the page comes out on the page.
Hmm.
Like any true artist, I hate what I've done about 5 minutes after I do it. But
really?
yeah. Okay. But then I sell it like it's the next coming. But I try to, like, you know, get better from book to book, process the process, and you know, that's it.
Hmm. So when you're an artist and you have people critique your art, what is your general like line of dealing with that? Because I know a lot of people can take it either or, they can kind of leave it in the air. You just generally go like, oh, yeah, that's cool. Thank you for your, you know, comment. Or just well, like-
it depends. So like I've been lucky enough to make a lot of friends that make comics, and then I will send them like the newest book I'm doing or the newest covers I'm doing, and I will ask them kindly to take me to the woodshed, like beat the piss out of my work so it's the absolute best I can be. And I think universally, I don't think I've had anyone that they're all almost shocked at how open I am to saying, you know, stop doing this, do this more, try this, try that. Because no matter what, a critique is, obviously, it's got to matter who it's coming from. It's got to be someone you respect, someone who, you know, if the person who's giving me a critique can't draw, you know, a circle with a crayon, then at the same time, you're like, it's only so good as a chef's not going to come to me and ask how they make the best, you know, bouillabaisse. They're going to go to another chef who they know they respect their work. So for me, when I reach out to other artists I know and I get feedback from them, it's only going to help me, you know. So to me, I'm very open to it.
So who are some of your favorite comic book artists of all time?
All time, are we going Mount Rushmore? Is that what you want
to say? Yeah, that's fine.
We'll keep it to a tight four. Todd McFarlane's on there because he brought me into the whole comics thing. Then there is Art Adams. He's up there. Frank Quietly, who's just ungodly. And then if I've got to look, it's like a, I don't know, man, Steve McNiven, Joe Quesada, you know, Daniel Warren Johnson's up there, James Harren. I'm a big fan of Stegman. You know what? I'm going to say Riley Rossmo. I love Riley Rossmo. Yeah. If you check out his work, he's so different and unique. But ask me in 10 minutes and I might have a whole nother four. We'll see.
That's the thing is, like, there are some art, like, there's generally art styles that I love, but then there's ones where I'm not really super attracted to, but then I read the book and it's pretty solid. Like, have you ever had that where like you're not attracted to like the cover art, but the actual story of the book is just so good that the art just like doesn't faze you? Actually,
I've said it many times. I'm embarrassed to say when I was younger, and I couldn't really appreciate the art as much as I could appreciate it as like when I got older, was Mike Mignola, and I was like, what is this blocky? I don't like all this, you know. Like, and then man, now I look at it and I'm just like, It's like every panel is a piece of art. Like it's, you know, it's really, really crazy. But yeah, I think that's absolutely normal. You're going to appreciate certain things at certain times. I think the thing that like, to me, like most editors don't get a lot of credit, or if you're doing indie stuff, most creatives don't get a lot of credit for knowing what works. Like, I can't tell you how many friends I have that are big writers that are like, oh, I'd love to work with you, but the next thing I'm doing is this kind of book. And I don't think you're the right artist for this kind of book. Cause it's kind of like Hollywood. Like they call it casting. We're casting art for a book. So who's the style? Like, you know, I probably would not be the artist on a My Little Pony book, even though between you and I would crush it. But I legitimately can understand why someone wouldn't want to go and, you know, cast me who does like big superhero-y type stuff as that. But then it's also up to a creative to kind of make sure you don't get yourself pigeonholed and go out there and do something different. So don't always do like, I think the book you got, the review you saw was for Wailing Blade. Wailing Blade is a book I did with writer Rich Duick, colorist Chris Sotomayor, and letterer Taylor Esposito. And then that book is the most big, bombastic, over-the-top action, double-page spread. It's madness from page to page, and that's the intent of the book. It's supposed to be just completely fun, you know, crazy action with a huge, huge sword called the Wailing Blade. And then after that, I said, well, I don't want to just do stuff like that, so I did a book called Happy Hill, and Happy Hill was a family comedy vacation horror. And then, you know, I did a book after that, Pillar and Pride, the Last Adventure of Pillar and Pride, where it was a buddy book. And then the thing I'm working on right now is something that's like, I guess, like medieval times. So those are four vastly different things. But you know, at the same time, I pop in and I do covers. So I did some covers for Image and for IDW and covering all different things. So, you know, the same thing is like you, a movie actor, if he always does action, is never going to get that Oscar role. And, you know, with artists and even writers, you got to kind of switch it up and kind of show that you can do different things.
That's a big thing too, with getting typecast. Actually, that's why people that generally do like superhero roles try to eventually get out of it and do other things, but sometimes it usually fails, sometimes it usually works, because, you know, people grow to have a certain person accustomed to that one thing they are used to seeing them in, right? Absolutely. So they only see them as that one thing. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
And listen, sometimes that's a good thing. Like, you know, when you are known for, like, that's why I think it's great to be able to do your own project, do a big two project or a big five project, or, you know, I think as long as you can show readers, because they're your number one audience, readers and retailers, if you could show them that you could put something in people's hands that is worth their time and worth their money, then they'll build that trust with you and they'll always come back, hopefully.
So since this is going to be people's first time introduction to you on the, you know, podcasting platforms and any, and on Rumble, where I'm going to put this out at, because, you know, this show is a little too X-rated for YouTube standards, actually. So what are the books that you have worked on outside of the major stuff? So what are your indie titles that you have worked on?
So the first book I ever did was called Scam. Okay. S-C-A-M. It was like Ocean's 11 meets the X-Men. So okay. It was about a team of superpowered con men on a revenge heist in Vegas. And like any good Vegas story, things went horribly wrong. And that was from a publisher called Comics Tribe. Then I have, I did a bunch of anthologies for Image. I'd have to look up the names of them. Then I also did a book from the defunct Aftershock, but I don't know when and where that's going to come out. Then I have Wailing Blade, like I said, that was also a Comics Tribe. Happy Hill was with Comics Tribe. And now the thing I'm working on currently is we're seeing which publisher it's going to land with. So we'll see where that comes out. But those are like the primary ones. You can go and get the fully collected editions. Otherwise, the stuff I've done is like I did Nailbiter for like Image. I did like, you know, some stories there. But it's like you'd have to like pick and choose like issues or anthologies to go find it.
Because the books you had on your bio, I was like, oh, okay, that actually sounds kind of cool, actually. The Last Ride of Killer and Pride. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that was a fun book, but we Aftershock is going through some issues right now, so we don't know exactly when or where it's going to come out.
No worries. Your Kickstarter you have right now is Happy Hill number 1, Supernatural Horror Vacation.
I don't. There's no Kickstarter now. That was a little while ago. So right now there's no Kickstarter. Okay. But the publisher that put that out does have a book called Sync, which is absolutely fantastic. If you're a fan of horror, I can't recommend the book Sync enough. It's phenomenal.
Okay. So we got all that out of the way. And let's try this. Favorite movies that you like. Which is your preferred genre?
I feel like action adventure mystery is probably like my favorite thing. I mean, if we're gonna go all time, my favorite movies are like Rocky, The Goonies, Indiana Jones, not Crystal Skull. That never happened. That movie does not exist.
I don't think the newest one exists either, actually.
I like the newest one. I'm gonna be in that camp where I was actually happier than I thought with that new one. And then yeah, like you know, I'm pretty, like, I really like John Wick.
I watched those, Out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, pretty easy.
What did you think of Knives Out? Because I actually thoroughly enjoyed it, actually.
I loved the first one, and the second one was, it was good, but it wasn't, like, the first one really kind of set the tone.
Yeah, I think in the first one, a lot of people missed that. Because a lot of people think like the killer's revealed instantly, and it's like, well, no, that's actually not true. She's actually not the one that ended up doing what happened in the story. Actually, people just aren't used to seeing stories like, well, if the person that killed the person allegedly is right there, then how are they the hero of the story? But it's like, I'd rather Rian Johnson do stuff like that than be on Star Wars, if I'm being honest here.
We can be honest, but I'm going to say something, and this is going to get in a lot of trouble. I am not a Star Wars guy, right? Now, I'm not pooping on it. I just didn't see it growing up, so I didn't have an attachment to it. So the first time I was ever exposed to Star Wars was the prequels. And I remember walking in and being like, why is this fish guy talking Jamaican? What's happening in these movies? I don't understand what's going on. And then it didn't kind of make sense. Yeah, there was some cool action things, but I was like, I don't see what everyone's so excited about. Mm-hmm. But out of seeing, now I've seen all the movies. And I got to say, I actually like Rian Johnson's Star Wars movie. I think it was one of my favorite ones that I saw because I wasn't attached to it. So when he was like, burn down everything, burn down this, burn down. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, wow, this guy's really swinging for the fences. And I don't think I've rewatched the movie, but I didn't hate it by any means. But I understand, you know, Star Wars fans are fickle and passionate. But to Rian Johnson's credit, man, I think the storytelling method he set up in these Knives Out movies are completely their own. So right after two of them, now we know whatever we know of the first half of the movie, then the whole thing's gonna flip to something else, and that's a very cool thing that I think as a creator, I try to work on making people pay attention constantly. And as someone who like devours, like I think I've read like 5 or 6 books. All right, read audio books, but I'm being fair. And that's like a big storytelling thing that you really need to keep the reader on or the viewer on edge. And make it so that they have to pay attention and they can't get lackadaisical in it, right? Like we could watch a John Wick movie and you can just take an action scene for 20 minutes and think, you know how it's going to come out. He's going to come out at the end of it. He's going to be a little beat up. But Rian Johnson makes you go like, oh, now I know. Because there's going to be a third one in The Knives Out. Is it? And now you know. You don't have any time to not pay attention. You have to be locked in the entire time so that you get the full enjoyment out of the movie. So I think that's cool.
What do you think of the MCU at this point now?
I think I've fallen off like a bunch of people have with the
latest. What was the movie that did that in then? What was the movie where you're like, I'm just fucking done with this shit?
Well, I'm not done with it. It's just that I feel like Infinity War and the Endgame, that was like a perfect end. Here we go. And then I was never the big, like, I want to see the movie because I like the characters, not because it's all these interconnecting pieces. Right. And to me, it's just, I haven't been like super into it. I haven't seen all the shows on Disney Plus. I haven't seen. So like at a certain point, it kind of felt like, I guess like continuity in comics feels like if you fall out of it, it's like, now it's not that I can't just jump in and see 1 2-hour movie. I've got to jump in. I've got to see 12 hours of a TV show. Plus I've got to see these 3 movies. Then I've got to see this. Otherwise I'm going to be lost. So I think it's just the continuity is starting to make it a little tougher, more hesitant for me to jump back in. But, I think I've seen Loki. I haven't seen the last season, but, I like some stuff. I just, it comes down to, just time, I think.
Yeah, that's the thing is recently, I mean, we're hearing all these rumblings about how they're going to be changing up things. And I always have to do this thing where I don't want to be that guy, but it's like, I got to see it, man. I got to see it to believe it. They're going to be changing because they've been on this course road of it's like destruction, but it's been pretty bad after Endgame. Like, I think I've liked maybe 1 or 2 movies that they put out since Endgame.
Well, what came out? There was
Far From Home.
That was Quantumania, right?
Yeah, that's Phase 5. Phase 4, it was, well, technically Far From Home ends Phase 3, which is really, really weird. So Phase 4, we had Black Widow, Shang-Chi, Eternals, okay. Spider-Man, Doctor Strange, Thor, Love and Thunder, and you had Black Panther 2.
Okay, I've seen Black Panther 2, I've seen Love and Thunder. I don't know that I've seen the other one. I don't know.
You didn't see No Way Home?
No, that was the one with all the Spider-Man came back, right?
Yes.
That I've seen too. And I'm gonna say this, like they were still fun movies, the ones that I saw. Like I didn't dislike them at all. I think with building the universe this big, they 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 have a lot of things. Like, listen, I love Black Panther too. It's not Chadwick Boseman, right? You built that character up into something, and now we have to say goodbye to him. And that's, and I thought the way they did a send off in the beginning of that was really, really touching. But it was hard to go through that 20 minutes of literally watching the person be kind of put to rest and then getting into the action of it. But I thought it was a good movie. I think they've had some harder times as of late, you know, with the guy who was going to be Kang and then this and that. And like, and I guess there's people talking out about working in it and it's too big of a mechanism and a machine. I mean, listen, if they make a good movie, I'll definitely be able to check it out. But I also got to make these comics, man. I got to make comics. Yeah. You know, I got kids, stuff like that. So as much as I want to sit down and watch the entire season of Moon Knight, my kids got softball practice and I got to go help out.
That's true. So how long you been a dad for?
That I know of, my oldest is 12.
Okay. Yeah. And so you enjoy being a dad?
Love it.
You said you have about, what, three kids, you said, right?
No, two that I know of. Two.
Mm. So if there's any advice you could give for any, like, parents out there, what would it be?
For what, specifically? Like, you know.
If you're feeling overwhelmed, if you're feeling you can't do something, what did you do, actually? Were you, like, overwhelmed when kid first was born? You know, he's 12 now, you said. So it's a lot of chances.
I have two girls, right? So
two girls.
So I'm just a person that comes from a very grateful place. Like that's me. Like I had a parent pass away when I was young. So to me, just being around my kids as much as I can, being involved as much as I can, watching them grow as much as I can, because sincerely, people told me back when my wife was walking around with a big old belly and the first kid in it, that like it goes quick, it goes by in a blink. And my, like I said, my kid is 12 and I feel like it went like that already. You know, my youngest is 9 and that's going, but like, I don't know. We're very lucky. My wife and I are on the same page. Our kids are, and I'm not just saying this because they're mine. Our kids are tremendous. They're great, great girls. Polite, funny, fierce. You know, it's just the only thing I could say is raise the people you want to be around, raise the kind of people you want the world to be filled with, and understand that there's no rest for the weary. You know what I mean? You're gonna have times where you're low, you're tired, you're exhausted, but just, you know, try to know that like there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and also you only have them for a little bit of time. And try to tap into that future you that's like, oh man, I wish they'd still want to, you know, have me pick them up and carry them somewhere. I wish they'd want me to like go out and play with them and all that stuff. So, you know, just enjoy it too.
I will say, I played tennis a few years in high school. It teaches you a lot. It's sports. And a lot of people sometimes don't want to have their kids do it because there's a lot of like, it's like not things that could happen. It's more like, sports is a very challenging thing for a lot of people, you know? But I think the less. Yeah, the things I learned from it were so valuable that I wouldn't replace them for the world, actually. You know, endurance, thinking on the fly, practicing, making, like, all these decisions that I probably wouldn't have made, you know, in life in other situations if I didn't go through, you know, sports, actually, you know?
Well, and sports is a great metaphor. You don't have to do sports. I know plenty of other kids that do, you know, acting, dance, band, musicians. Like, it's just like, you know, pick something you feel passion for, mm-hmm. and put yourself into it. And don't ever let work be the thing that stops you from doing something. You can, like, I mean, I coach as a volunteer, like, you know, for my kids' teams. But like, there's only two things you control: your attitude and your effort. And that's a lesson for life. Like, guess what? Yeah, you can't make a free throw now. You're 8, but keep working at it. And I guarantee you, if you do it, you're gonna get it. Like I always push the 100. Is it the 100-hour rule? That if you do something for 18 minutes a day, or break that up however you want during the week, you know, you get. If you do that for a year, you're going to put in like, you know, 100 hours of something. My math might be completely off on this, but the whole point is you're going to put in effort. And if you put in effort, you're going to be bound to get better at something. You know, it's just, and like, it's anything. So, you know, and it's, and by the way, it's art too. Like I'm, I'm a bazillion times better than when I started. And no matter what, the whole thing is like, you know, you see your kids doing something that they like, you know, get into it and try to like kind of motivate them a little bit with some positivity and some encouragement.
Mm. And you know how like there's all these conversations going on now about like guys and getting married and all that stuff. You enjoy being married as you've been with your wife for a long time. How do you do it then? Actually, how do you stay in a happy relationship for the most part?
Listen, this is like now we're going to start doing the advice show. I like this a lot. Listen, what works for one doesn't work for the other. But
yes, yeah, sir.
I'm a very happily married man. If you would have asked me years ago, would I ever get married? Nope. Wouldn't I said I would never get married, never wanted kids, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Understand that who you are today is not who you're going to be in 2 years. Doesn't mean you're going down a slippery path. It just means you're going somewhere else. You're going to be a different person, different life experiences. But to me, the whole thing is communication. Like, you know, there's nothing you can't, if you can't say something to a person, then maybe that person's not the right person for you. But I was extremely lucky and blessed to have found the perfect one for me.
So how would you say, if you could give any like line of advice for guys that want to go and date, what would like be your best advice for that?
I think it's harder now. Like, I'll be honest, I dated, you swipe right, swipe left. But, like that was all coming up, but it wasn't as pronounced as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's getting harder and harder to make those actual connections. Like to me, the freakiest thing is like, I walk down my block and I can't tell you how many people you'd see walking. Just there's no one who looks up. Everyone's on a phone. And like, to me, that's a scary thing because and by the way, I've seen it. Like I was at towards a film shoot today. There's a break in a film shoot and everyone doesn't even look to talk to each other. They just pull out their phone and look at it. And I think that's a big driver of like disconnect between just looking at people and starting up a conversation. Like, I think the biggest thing is obviously you got to talk to people. You got to know, you know, if you have shared common interests and not too many interests, because you need that person you're connecting with to bring in some new experiences to your life as well. You know what I mean? But yeah, I don't know. I guess my biggest thing is good luck, because it's definitely not easy, but it's 100% worth it.
Because now it's really hard. And you know, like a lot of people are going to be saying things like, well, how is the dating pool so bad? It's not even the fact that it's bad. It's just more like, I think a lot of people have come to the realization in life, which is not a bad one. Time is so valuable. You don't want to waste it on anything that's not going to be worth it. Because, you know, like, let's be honest here, life could be over at any moment, no matter what the situation is, no matter what day. So you don't want to waste your time on a person that's not going to, like, be a benefit to your life in 10, 15, some odd years. And that I can understand. You know, that is a very understandable thing. So you want to make sure you're potentially picking out the right person to make the connection to. Because what I think the real reason why a lot of these relationships fail, it's not because they're, like, even just bad people. Synergy. There's no actual genuine chemistry with people, you know? Yeah. It's before.
Everyone's on their phone. That's always been, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, you go back to maybe the 20s, 30s, and 40s. People just got married. They were told who they're marrying. You got married, and then you stayed in a miserable relationship. Now, like, to me, the thing is, man, you got to break some eggs. You got to break the shell to make some eggs, right? You're going to have to get in to some crappy relationships. But the thing is, you got to be honest with it. You can't be like, well, I'm going to stay in this thing for the next 3 months. I'm going to stay in this thing. No, no, no. Like, listen, you couldn't even tell me, you know, you want to, if you roll your eyes and I say, you want to go to a Yankee game, you're not the person for me then. And that's okay. Like, because I think like a lot of,
I agree. Mm-hmm.
A lot of the stuff online is promoting an image of yourself that might not really be true, but you want to be true. So maybe it's a facade. And when you get in a relationship, that facade's only going to last so long before the person realizes who the real you is. That's why for me, I mean, going back to your original question, I would say the best thing you could do is start off with the real, not a facade, not a this and that. You got to be the person that you are rather than a projection of something you want to pretend to be. So that way you could be the best you can be. And that person might not like you. And I think a lot of people are scared with stuff, comics, getting into any profession, because rejection hurts. It sucks. It's not a good thing. But when you get a thicker skin, you have to realize it doesn't matter. Like the person who gave me a bad review, the truth is I found it hysterical, which probably is only going to promote more bad reviews. But legitimately, you can't worry about that. If, listen, I guarantee you, I walk outside, I guarantee you there's people that walk by that think that guy's too wide, too tall, too this, too short, too that. People will think a lot of things, but you got to give less than two shits about what any random stranger thinks. So you just got to put yourself out there. But while time is a valuable commodity, and I appreciate you spending some of yours talking with me, time is a very fickle thing, because when time is with the right people, it moves fast and it's fun. And when it's not with the right people, it moves slow and it's arduous. Mm-hmm. So guess what? If you're with someone and the time's going real slow and arduous, they ain't the right one. Be it a friend or more. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's just not the way to go.
The other thing is now is like all these like guys are addicted to like OnlyFans. Like I bet you when you were younger to get to that stuff, you had to get to like Playboy and all that other shit. You know,
right, I don't know if you think I'm 90, but okay, I got it. Let me move my wheelchair closer to the couch. But no. Like we had porn back then. It wasn't, we had online porn. I'm not as old as you. Yeah. But the thing, I mean, OnlyFans is. It's like when you see the numbers that some people are making, you're like, I got to start a foot fetish, Pat, like something is like it, but it really is ridiculous. But to me, that's not a relationship. That's not healthy. You can't come home after a bad day of work or, you know, a fight with your mom or a fight with your brother or sister and come back and talk to an OnlyFans person like they're really going to care. Like that's, I mean, to me, I don't subscribe to OnlyFans, but you know, maybe I'm going to start one after this conversation. We'll see how it goes. But I think that's kind of like a placeholder. Well, I don't have to go out. I don't have to get rejected. I don't have to talk to somebody. I can pay for a facsimile of a relationship or a conversation. And then from that, I can pretend that I'm somewhat engaging in someone that I'm attracted to. I think it's a stall tactic, you know, I mean, a very entertaining stall tactic, but you got to get out in life and meet people.
Yeah, because what I've always told people that like that stuff is, I don't care how you spend your money, but I better not hear someone like that telling me 5 years down the road that was a bad decision. I was like, well, no shit. Like, I've never told someone how to spend their money, but I will say the fact that it is essentially trying to make this bridge to a person where it's just not worth it. Like, once you come to the realization, for any guy's going to watch the show, once you come to the realization that person literally doesn't care about you, probably talks massive shit about you to their friends too, probably doesn't give a fuck about you, why would you want to spend your money on that? You know, you have all these people now that are like, hey, fuck these corporations because they don't like us and we're not giving our money. Well, think about that for like OnlyFans women there. Have you all noticed the fact that when these girls talk to each other on stream, they can't help but say, man, all these guys are fucking pigs, they're trash, they're ugly, they're disgusting, they'll gladly take your money. But it's like, that's how you really feel? It's like, when you start noticing those things, you're like, I said before, once you find out who that person really is, you're like, I kind of step back when I find out who those people really are. It's like, nah, I'm good, you know?
Yeah, but it's like, again, years ago, you used to go, if you went to a strip club, you know, the stripper's job is to make you feel like she's really into you. That's,
oh, yeah,
that's the job. Mm-hmm. And I don't begrudge people making money however they want to make money. And listen, I'm not going to lie to you. I've never even looked at OnlyFans, but I know of the massive amount of influence and money that's pumping. I mean, it's bonkers how much money goes into OnlyFans a month. Like, it's crazy. I listen to podcasts or shows and they'll have people on and I'm like blown away, right? But no matter what, like, you know, that's it's a placeholder. You're spending your time, your money, and you do whatever you want. Like, that's your, we live in America, you know, there's a lot of freedoms here and that's one of them, but it's not going to get you to the next place. Like, it's going to be vapid at the best. It's like, you know, yeah, it's great to eat a bag of Doritos. They taste delicious. But if that's all you do, you know, you're going to wake up 400 pounds, you know, with a defibrillator on your chest and you're going to be like, man, I really should have cut back. Like, I don't know how much money it is, or but I would assume, you know, no matter what, you know, people, they gotta get out in real life, go talk to real people, make real connections, because that it's not healthy long term.
I think what really put all that stuff into motion was, like, a lot of the corporations, a lot of the businesses started moving towards this, like, digital era that they want to be in so bad, where you're cutting out all these middlemen, you're cutting out the vital interaction. It's like, I don't know if you can imagine the Gathering at all, or trading card games, but remember there was this big blowback that Amazon itself, or like a lot, like Wizards of the Coast was going to sell, like, product through their own website, which is not bad. Like, obviously they can do that. So they own the fucking licensing rights.
Yeah, but right.
The issue is a lot of these companies have forgotten that us having, like, let's say we talk to each other and we're playing, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! Or Pokemon or whatever we're doing, that's creating the community at large that goes and spends money on this stuff, you know? And if you start cutting out all these, like, valuable key aspects to grow something, then you have what you have right there, you know? People don't even value connections anymore, or, like, just interaction. Like you said before, when you're going outside, people are most, I have the same thing too, most people are just on their phones. You know, that's because people have been kind of tooled to be like, no, you don't really need other people in your life anymore. You just need your phone and Twitter.
And, right. Well, and then to your point, oh, well, you know, this is the interaction. Like, listen, I understand, even if you're talking about an OnlyFans person, if I start putting pictures of my feet on Instagram and all of a sudden I go up 10,000 people in Instagram, I'm, oh, man, wow, this is what sells. So I got to keep doing this. Like, I get it. But it's like, you know, it's kind of like vapid, like hollow attention. You want to get attention for, like, you know, I would think so, my own thing. You want to get attention for something that you're proud of. So to me, like, you know, like Magic the Gathering and all that stuff, those are some of the biggest nights at the comic shop or the whatever, where they go, they have this huge thing, it's like catered, they do all the, like, it's a community building thing. Like, you know, I think maybe, like, and I've never done it, but I know that a lot of people go and they do it. And I'm like, I think that's a fun community building thing. Like, you know, you try to get out there as much as possible. Like, I don't know. That's my thing. I'm not, I agree that corporations are trying to, you know, make everything, you know, much more delivered to your door. We're getting like WALL-E. I don't know if you've seen the movie WALL-E, the animated movie.
Yeah.
So we're getting,
Axing the physical media stuff too. You know, physical media is getting axed across the board in a lot of these places, because they're like, well, to be fair, to their credit, I like defending them a lot, but I understand it from a business point of view. It's like, if this is a lot of money we're investing into this and it's not getting us back the profit, and we know big corporations want massive profit, like, then I understand from that point of view why you would cut it. Because I know a lot of people don't like to see it that way, but it's true though. If you don't make a lot of money with some of these companies, they don't want to keep it. And that's fully understandable, but physical media has a place, you know, and it's such a weird world to navigate now. There's companies that want to kind of get rid of this kind of thing, but they also want to make sure you have interaction, but it's just through like your phone. What a crazy world we live in, man.
It is, but you know what? It's like, it's up to all of us to learn how to navigate it. Like, that's it. It's just, you know what I mean? Like, right now I'm on my phone. I apologize for the bars on the side here.
It's okay.
But like, you know, it is meant to attract you to keep touching it and dinging it. And the algorithm is built in to make you touch, make sure, like, the alerts will go off. Like, just throw down the phone, go outside, go meet some people, go have some fun. You know, by the way, I will say this, that's the benefit of sports. You still got to do that in person. You still got to go, like,
oh, yeah,
you know. Mm-hmm. And then even, like, watching sports. Like, you know, I can't go to a Jets game, though. It's too heartbreaking. I know something horrible is going to happen while I'm there. But, you know, like, that's the fun of sports. You got to be there. You got to be in person to do it.
Yeah, man. And, I always try to make sure that I'm positive in a lot of things that I like, too. Because I know there is a lot of bad that comes with a lot of this stuff, too. But the good is just so good. You know, like, today I was pacing back and forth from work. Oh, we're cleaning like hell because there's this inspection coming tomorrow. And I was just thinking, like, man, I really love this stuff. I just stopped and go, like, I really love all these fucking things. You know, despite companies themselves trying to destroy them, I do genuinely love this stuff. And it's like, that keeps me buying floppy comic books. That keeps me buying manga, watching movies, anime, television, all that
stuff.
Well,
you're asking me all these questions. Let me ask you, what are some of the books you're buying right now and liking?
Well, yesterday on social media, I just posted this. Oh, God. My wrist, I'm flaccid. Hands is flaccid over here. So I saw this at my local Walmart. Because I went to Walmart to buy some groceries for the house and stuff. So I saw this. And I never, ever read or watched Berserk. So I was like, this is just so beautiful. And I was like, I need to have this right now. I was like, I'm not walking out of here without that in my hands. So, oh, also, I got... There's also, this is for a video, so I can't really show this right now. But this is the next line of comic books that I'm going to open up for a Mail Day episode. I just got through... Well, so I've consumed many stories throughout my life, but I never had a comic shop. Remember growing up, like I mentioned. So I had to basically get comics through, like, weird, obscure ways, like newspapers. So I mostly had, like, manga throughout my life. That was, like, my comic books, right? I had Shonen Jump magazines.
Yep.
So to learn about, like, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, all these characters, like, their comic stories, not, like, the animated TV stuff. I had access to that. Kind of just had to go online and just read about it for, like, not just, like, wiki pages. I would just go and type, like, what happened to the story, and they would just pop up, honestly. So when I got old enough and I got a job, I started buying, like, graphic novels of these characters, floppies myself right now. Floppies that I just recently bought. I have them in my eBay cart. I bought Predator Last Hunt, issue number one. Marvel loves their issue number ones. You know about that. Let me go to my purchase history. I got so many omnibuses now. Holy crap. So, like, I tried to make sure I expanded my collection of stuff. Because when I first started buying books, like comic books and everything, I was, oh, God. You didn't want to hear how bad that shit was, dude. I literally went in and just started buying rank. I didn't know things were attached to runs, you know? I didn't know you had to get a complete run. I didn't know that. So I was just buying random shit. Just sort of random floppies from characters that I liked, obviously. So then I did it again. But I was like, wait a minute. Oh, this connects to this. So I made sure to stop doing that. So I kept the book that I already bought, but I would buy the stuff before that. And then when I got to that point, buy the stuff after. So about 5 or 6 omnibuses now. I'm just trying to just grow my collection because, well, you know, I didn't really have a chance to do that growing up because, well, I wasn't exposed to this stuff as much.
Now, do you like the whole collection better than the floppies?
So I know there's people that like either or. For me, instead of having a shop around me, it's much more cost effective to just get an omnibus or a trade paperback than it is just hunt down floppies. Because if you're going to ask, like, well, why get an omnibus? Isn't it like $90? Well, yeah, it's $90, but it's the entire run. So that, to me, covers up the value of, like, you know, buying a book. I got to pay shipping and taxes on this stuff, you know?
Yep.
So with trade paperbacks, if it's a big story, I'll probably try to find the omnibus. If not, then I'll just get the trade paperbacks, honestly. Because each trade paperback is like, could be like $10-$20, maybe $30 given run. Then you're paying tax on that too. So I prefer like the hardbacks, hardcovers, and omnibuses. But if there's enough floppies, if it's like a limited series, I might make the exception, you know?
Yeah, I feel like, I think that's why like manga is, I mean, along with just being great content and great stories, the fact that it's like you're getting a huge chunk of story rather than a chapter, you're getting like a huge, you know, you feel like it's you're getting your money's worth. I feel like that's a very big thing that's going on like right now.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's that's why I think more people are buying manga more. It's not because like floppies are all bad. Because I do buy floppies. It's the thing is like, so let's say you I don't know if you give your kids allowances, but if you give your kid like a $20 allowance, they're like, Dad, you know what? I could buy this floppy. But if you tell them, hey, honey, a little bit more money, you can get a giant manga book, 180 pages. Yeah. Floppies are like 24 pages, what, like $6, give or take? It's like that. The manga is just more bang for your buck at this point now. Listen,
in my house with two young girls, Raina Telgemeier is a author, illustrator, does stuff with Scholastic, I believe. She's like the queen. Like, she has like a bunch of books, Guts, Ghosts. I have one. My daughter just finished reading it and brought it back into my office. And it's like this. So it's like, you know,
what's Ghosts
by Raina Telgemeier. It's very good. And then they're reading Amulet, which is, I don't know if you've read Amulet. It's a Amulet series. It's awesome. Very, very good books. But they're getting like, right, each book they're getting 250 pages, 270 pages. Like, And it's, you know, $12 or something like that. Like,
because you know how people have been saying, like, a lot of the floppies are like woke. It's not even that. They're just like not. It's not that they're woke or anything like that. It's more like a lot of them aren't interesting and a lot of them aren't just good. So, like, there's a lot of oversaturation too. And I think that's a big problem. It's like, they're not only is just really hard to get into, because like, even if you do get into it, because I got myself into it, not only is just that part itself really hard, when you do get into it, there's so much oversaturation. And even if you wanted to get a new character's run, you might be already like 5 issues behind, you know?
100%. And then, you know, if you go to like, I mean, The Walking Dead is an outlier because it was so popular, but like,
right.
If you go to like a lot of books, like I think Ice Cream Man is a book that comes out from Image. I think it's up to like issue 36, 37, 38. That's mm-hmm. a rarity now that a book goes that far. Even Marvel, after like certain times, Marvel, DC, bigger companies will be like, yeah. "No, we're just going to restart
with number one." Yeah, like, the ones that are high up there, man, like no one. That's the thing too, is like when they're past a certain point, when it's past like issue number, to me, like 20 or as low as 15, I'm always skeptical. Like, I don't know when is it gonna get rebooted again. You know, that's another 100%.
It becomes such a deterrent for new mm-hmm. people. I can't tell you how many people. The best one was I had a buddy call me, and I can curse, right? So
yeah, you're a Rumble. You can say whatever you want, man.
Okay, so my buddy calls me after like the second or third, the last season of Daredevil comes out, and he's starting to watch them concurrently, and he is like, "Dude, this show is awesome. I got to start reading Daredevil. I'm going to the comic shop." I go to the comic shop. Wherever he goes, I think he's in Astoria. He goes to a comic shop. He calls me up on the phone. He's like, "What the fuck did you do to me? How do I fuck?" He was like, there's a bazillion Daredevils. And like, he was looking at graphic novels. He's like, "There's so much." And I'm like, "Dude, you got to ask someone there." Like, you know, because I think at a certain point in the Marvel books, they started making him kind of look like the way he's Daredevil in the Netflix series or whatever. But
that's so actually like, true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm like, "Dude, you gotta like just ask them or whatever." I said, "But like, you know," I was like, "it's kind of like a story that's like 70 years old. So you have to understand, you know, if you don't want something from the 60s, then try to ask for something more recent." But like, I think that's a plus and a minus, right? Like, I keep talking about Todd McFarlane. His Spawn is at 350 issues, but it's one run all the way through. So if you picked up issue 350 and you're like, "Oh, I really like this," I can go back and for $10, $12, whatever it is, pick up the first trade. If I like that, pick up the second trade, pick up the third trade. With bigger, more like, you know, iconic heroes, with like Captain America, the Avengers, it's very difficult. There's no, you know, I know they were talking years about switching to a streaming service type model, where it's going to be like, you know, volume one, volume two, or season one, season two, season three. But, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know if that's going to be the answer. Like, it's very hard. Like, I think that's why, like, a few years ago, what was the DC thing that they did where it was like...
It was a DC Universe Online app, I remember.
Yeah, it was a whole new lineup, like Rebirth, whatever it was. And, you know, they were like, "Oh, they're undoing this, they're undoing that." But at the same time, they're giving people a chance to jump on. Like,
you know, why they made the new 52.
The new 52, that's what I think it was. Yes, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, the big reason was, hey, if you didn't ever consume this stuff or anything prior to like 2011, 2012 when it dropped, so 2011, you can just jump in right here, you know?
Yeah,
just, you know.
I know that's why so many people like Kickstarter or fan service, because they can go there and they can get like, you know, they can get issues, they can get floppies, they can get whatever they want. And I think bigger publishers are catching on, because I think Boom, Top Cow, all these bigger publishers are going to Kickstarter to like kind of, you know, push books. You can get Power Rangers books there. You can get like all this stuff. So
that's another thing to bring up too. Power Rangers. If anyone doesn't know this, Power Rangers, they did a new run called Mighty Morphin Power Rangers: The Return, written by Amy Jo Johnson, who was obviously the original Pink Ranger. They put that book out initially through Kickstarter, because they realized they could make more money just doing it through Kickstarter and having people donate. They just give you the book, than doing it through the direct market with floppies.
Well, as someone who's had you know, several Kickstarters, I will tell you the way you can market your Kickstarter is more than probably people who will walk into a comic shop. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. because I can attach it to an Instagram reel. I can attach it to I can advertise on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. I can do all these things to get it out there. Whereas, you know, like you just said, like if you don't have a comic shop around you, you're SOL. You're not going to get, you know, the same benefit. Like, listen, but to me, if I'm putting out a book, I'm going to go and I'm going to sell it at my local shop because they're super supportive. I love talking to people who've read the books and checked it out. And, you know, mm-hmm. like that interaction is worth something to me. But distribution wise, you can't beat the internet. The internet's everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing you brought up there too is, you know, you have an indie book, or you could go to your shop and obviously ask the owners if you could do this. Talk to people to sell it to them, you know, get to know them, you know.
Listen, the books I put out are all through Diamond, so it's all in comic shops everywhere. Mm-hmm. But I will say, like, with Kickstarter, we plan to do the books, get it out to the Kickstarter audience, and then it goes worldwide through regular comics channels of distribution. But there's something to the Kickstarter experience where I can do a warm-up sketch every day and throw it in to a random person, mm-hmm. and they can get it. I can do nine hundred different things that I can't do with just one comic shop in Nebraska ordering my book. Like, it's harder.
So last few things I'll ask you before we gotta head out, because I gotta do my Tuesday show in a little bit, which is, first thing, what's the feeling of getting to hold your books, actually? I know I asked every creator this, like, whenever you get a chance to hold your actual creation, how does it feel?
For a second, when you first hold it, it feels very good. It feels a nice big swell of accomplishment. And then as an artist, I flip through the pages and I go, oh, I didn't like that hand. I didn't like that foot. Oh my God, I drew the worst antler there. But at the same time, like, you know, I got to talk myself out of that mindset. It is not the usual mindset that the reader has. So as long as the reader's, you know, getting their money's worth, that's my number one priority.
And the other thing I'll ask is, you got any big plans coming up this year in 2024? Outside of the comic stuff you mentioned earlier, you going to do YouTube, yeah. Going to do anything else?
There's other books that I'm going to be working on that are very, very cool. A little bit, I guess, less indie. So I'll say that's coming up, or a little bit bigger, but I can't say a word, but it's going to be a very good, hopefully positive 2024.
Okay. Awesome. And the last thing I'll ask you is, any, shout outs you want to give to anyone in particular? Anything else you want to say before we head out?
I'm going to say to you, I appreciate you reaching out to me,
anytime, man.
Giving me this time to talk. As you can see, I am not a shy person. I like to.
That's good. I like to
cut it up.
Shows are the best. Yeah.
Yep. I like to cut it up and talk.
Everyone knows, I gotta grease the wheels first. You know, you gotta ease them into it. And then you ask that one question, then it starts a train. I love it.
Yeah. Oh, trust me. You don't, like, I am not known for brevity, so I will blabber. But yeah, man, I want to say thank you to you. I appreciate you reaching out. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me.
Yes, sir. So thank you guys for watching this episode of the Iron Man Podcast. And like I mentioned before, I'm going to mention on Tuesday's Big Showdown, these episodes are now available all on the podcasting platform. So I know a lot of people in the indie scene don't really value as much as I do, but I value, like you said before, getting eyes on everything and making sure people hear you guys when you guys are giving me your time for your show. Put your shows, anyone that has shows like these, put them out there on Spotify or any other podcasting platform. There's millions of people that watch and consume these shows just in audio, like you consume audiobooks. You know, and it's great exposure for this kind of thing. And, you know, I just love talking to people one-on-ones and trying to understand someone else's comic book journey compared to mine. Mine is so weird compared to other people's, but
listen, I've heard so many weird ones. Yours is not weird at all. I've heard someone who has, like, his family couldn't afford comics when he was younger, mm-hmm. and he was here stateside, but all of the comics he had were in, I think, Japanese. So he just was trying to figure out what was happening. So he legitimately learned through the pictures until he got, like, a little older and he went to the library and got an encyclopedia in Japanese so he could, like, then start to translate. That's some stuff. So yours is not even that bad. So that's what I'm saying. You didn't have to work that much to get the enjoyment.
Yeah. Thank you, man, for coming on. Hopefully to have you on in the future. Actually, absolutely. And we will see you guys later, everyone.